Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi there, this is Martina Navratilova.
Hi, I'm Mats Wilander.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. We have just one singles match of the French Open still to go. It is the French Open men's final between Stan Wawrinka and Rafael Nadal, who's going for 10 French Open titles. My name is David Law, joined by Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport, who's in Paris right now. Before we get on to anything else, Catherine Whittaker, I think we need to talk about the women's final, which was a cracker. And it featured a first-time winner of a Grand Slam tournament, a first-time winner of any tournament. 20 years of age, Yelena Ostapenko. I can't believe I'm saying it, to be quite honest. There was a great line from Chris Evert in your interview that we had on earlier today when she said she wouldn't have even been in my 20 to have won the title. And here she is.
No, and all of the greatest stories in sport are when something that unexpected happens. And I tweeted earlier today that the only person that doesn't seem surprised by all this is Yelena Ostapenko. And how is that not annoying? How is her precociousness and her confidence at that young an age not annoying? And I don't know the answer to that. Maybe it's unfair to those in whom it is annoying, but it's not. I just think she's so cool. I think she's gnarly and feisty and ballsy, and I love everything about her. And I really do think that this moment, her lifting that French Open trophy and being sung on by the Latvian national anthem, the first time a Latvian has ever won a Grand Slam title, I really do think this is a moment we'll be looking back on in the archives in 20 or 30 years' time. I cannot see her not going on to be a great tennis player, barring terrible injury or, I don't know, I really think this is a seminal moment in tennis. And she is incredible. A set and love three down to Simona Halep. I know that Simona Halep, and I really do spare a lot of thoughts for her this evening, seeing her sit courtside as they brought out the podium and set up for the trophy ceremony. She looked utterly shattered and disconsolate. And, you know, from her perspective, she's going to think, I've lost to an unseeded player from a set and three love and 15-40, I think, up, or 40-15 up, and I will never have a better chance to win a Grand Slam title. And yes, on paper, that's how it is, but that's not how it is, because I really think this is one of those Boris Becker winning Wimbledon at 17 moments, Chris Evert winning the French Open at 19 moments. I really do think it's one of those, and there is absolutely no shame for Simona Halep in losing today. And she was just beaten by a star and a great, great champion in the making.
Wow. Big words, Catherine. I'll have my view on them in a moment or two. Let's just go through the match itself. You mentioned that Halep was leading by a set and three love. And the first set was really good, wasn't it? It was 6-4. And actually, it only really there were loads of breaks of serve, but it only actually turned in the end in that 10th game when Halep just about managed to get the break. And I think it was Ostapenko just going long with a forehand. And then when she went three love down, I did think, oh, this is a bit of a shame. You know, this. Although I think Halep becoming world number one and winning the title would have been a great story in its own right, it would have been a real shame had that ended 6-3 or 6-4, 6-1, which I thought it was about to do. And I do feel that it is a great testament to Ostapenko's mentality, her temperament, that she managed to keep firing away and hitting the mark enough and rattling Halep. She took it away from her. It was the closest thing to the day before, where Wawrinka did the same to Murray. And it was great.
I think that's a really interesting comparison. I felt the same. You know, we were about to rush courtside when it went 3-love. We were sat there. I was plugging my walkie-talkie in, you know, to be prepared to go live after the match. I was preparing myself for that. We all were. We thought, oh gosh, this is going to be a quick second set and it's all going to be over and the high-ranked player is going to, in the end, whitewash. And I'm so impressed with Yelena Ostapenko. I know that she's young and fearlessness comes with youth, but it doesn't always, you know, it really doesn't always. It's been a long time since we really had somebody as young and as precocious as Yelena Ostapenko muscle their way into this scene. You know, Serena Williams has had a real stranglehold on women's tennis, and Angelique Kerber, you know, she's taken to her late 20s to be able to muscle her way in there. And yes, others have got in there and won the odd Grand Slam, but not in the way that Yelena Ostapenko has from nowhere and with the attitude that she has. And 54 winners to 54 unforced errors. There are big, big comparisons with Stan Wawrinka. And in terms of Simona Halep, look, she will be devastated, and rightly so. It should hurt. This should hurt. This was her French Open to lose. She was playing the tennis of her life. She had Darren Cahill boosting her up. I still believe, regardless of the result today, he's done a fantastic job, and I hope they continue working together. But this will hurt. However, with her style of play, I think there are similarities to Djokovic. It is brilliant. It is something to behold at its best. The wall of defence and the things they get back and the points they win that they have no right to win. That is a glory in itself. However, you are always susceptible, no matter how well you play, to somebody like Wawrinka on the men's side and like Ostapenko on the women's side, who goes for everything. You are susceptible to somebody having the match or the day or the purple patch of their life. That style of play is always going to be open. You're sort of saying, come and beat me. You're sort of saying, okay, try and hit winners against me. And yeah, you can do it once or twice, but can you do it time after time after time? And usually the answer is no, but occasionally a Wawrinka or an Ostapenko will come along and they'll say, yeah, I can do it time after time after time. And I'm going to do it on the biggest day, on the biggest occasion, and I'm going to wrestle this Grand Slam title from you. And that's what Ostapenko did today.
She certainly did. And she is a very, very worthy champion. Now, my reservations, my hesitation at agreeing with the degree to which you think she is going to be a great champion of the future. Look, she's already a great champion. No one will ever take away the fact that she is the French Open champion, aged only just 20. Wonderful achievement. There's a few things, though. One is, she hasn't shown any sign of this before, and she has been around for a couple of years. It's not like she...
Hang on. What do you mean, not any sign?
She hasn't. She's not come
any sign?
She's not won a title on the tour. She has not...
Yeah, but she's a teenager.
Yeah,
she's a teenager plus 2 days.
Loads of teenagers have won titles.
She has been talked about. That's like... Come on, David. No, that's
look,
like
I've
saying
seen
Denis Shapovalov has not won a title on the tour.
It is not the same thing. She has been on the tour for 2 years, right? I've been commentating her on her from
still,
BT
that
Sport.
Is, this is young. This is young in terms of modern tennis. Very young.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying she's not young, but she has been around for a couple of years, and she has not put it together to this point in those 2 years when players like Madison Keys have won titles without actually doing what Ostapenko's done. So, hats off to Ostapenko, no question about it. Wouldn't take away any of her achievement at all. But I don't necessarily feel that forecasts a future of multiple Grand Slams. I think she's capable. I think the shots are there. You don't hit 50 winners plus past Simona Halep in three sets without having the ability to do all the things that you've said. But there are other elements that will come into it.
What are the other? Okay, talk me through the other elements and where you doubt her.
We have no idea how she's going to handle being Yelena Ostapenko Grand Slam champion.
No
idea whatsoever.
You never do, though. You never do.
Well, of course.
So, yeah,
that's why you have to have reservations about it.
I'm guessing on the basis of her temperament, on the basis of what I've seen so far, that is what I think.
Would you have guessed?
I'm not saying there won't be wobbles here and there. Maybe she'll have an immediate wobble. It could be that she'll really dip away. I would very definitely be reluctant to predict her to do anything at Wimbledon. What I'm seeing is a potentially 15-year career ahead of her. I'm not talking about the next 6 months or even necessarily the next year. I'm talking about a potential 15-year career, which on the basis of Serena Williams and Roger Federer, and you know, that's the way the game is at the moment. I see her doing great things. I really do.
Well, I hope you're right. Certainly, of course. I just think of somebody like Garbiñe Muguruza, who I think a year ago we would have, most of us, thought the same. And I certainly, at the start of this year, I thought she would have an amazing
though.
Year. And she hasn't.
I don't know. Yeah, they're different characters, Muguruza, I feel, okay, she found it in herself for certain matches and for certain occasions in this French Open. I question whether she has found the love and the passion for tennis day in, day out. I think Yelena Ostapenko feeds off it. I really do. I think she lives and breathes for it. And I know there is a test to come, you know, when all the distractions come off the court, when all the sponsorship deals come flooding in and there are distractions and temptations coming left, right and centre. I know she hasn't been fully tested in that regard. And for that reason, I don't know for sure. I'm just saying on the basis of what I see at the moment and today, I see a really gnarly young lady. That's the word that kept me. I've spent quite a few days trying to find the right word. And I just think she's gnarly and cool. And I put it on Twitter earlier, like usually really precocious young people really annoy me. It's a real bugbear of mine, but she doesn't annoy me. She's somehow precocious and confident and in your face I'm sure some people find her annoying, each to their own, but I don't think she's sort of objectively annoying. I think she's just cool and ballsy, and I think that's great.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, certainly I think if you were to take a straw poll of some of her peers, some of them find her annoying. But I think you're right. I think a lot of times people do find precociousness annoying if it's beating you particularly.
Of course. Oh, gosh. If I was her opponent, I'd hate it.
But I would quite interesting.
Find her the most annoying person in the world.
I sat down and watched that.
But that's neither here nor there.
I sat down and watched that final with my wife, who'd never heard of her before. And she watched the match. And within 60 seconds, she was cheering for her. And she didn't come in with any preconceptions as to who she wanted to win, but it was very quick the way that Ostapenko won her over. And that approach, that sort of swashbuckling, I'm just going for it. I don't care who's down the other end. It is intoxicating. That would form, I think, the other part of my reservation about her in the future. This could just be a hot streak. It could be 2 weeks that she will never repeat because they all went in for these 2 weeks.
Yeah, look, she might be a Stan Wawrinka. She might never be world number one. She might not do it week in, week out. But Stan Wawrinka is a 3-time, potentially 4-time, potentially who knows, Grand Slam champion. And he will go down in the history books. And that is greatness in itself. I'm not necessarily predicting that she is going to be the all-time greatest or is going to be at world number one for, you know, 3 years in a row. You know, she's not necessarily going to be Serena Williams. I just think this is not a flash in the pan. She is here to stay in one way or another.
I do hope you're right. I do. I'm not convinced, but then I may be confused.
You think this might be a flash in the pan? Yeah, you think this might be a, you know, in 5 to 10 years' time, oh, God, yeah, you remember that year that, you know, sort of like a Moschino year? Gosh, do you remember that year?
No,
that
I wouldn't compare it to Moschino.
That was weird, wasn't it?
No, I wouldn't compare it to somebody like Moschino, because I don't think she had the potential to do a lot more than she did. I think she maxed out. I think Angelique Kerber has more than maxed out. I can't believe that she managed to win 2 Grand Slam titles last year and reach the final of a third.
But in terms of the history books, you think we might go, gosh, yeah, do you remember that weird year when Elena Ostapenko won?
I think you may look back on her and think that she was a prodigious talent and she showed it for that couple of weeks and maybe did it once more. Marat Safin only won 2 Grand Slam titles. How good was he?
Yeah. Marat Safin was a very specific character, though. Very specific.
I'm just saying I'm not...
I'm not saying there aren't some similarities. And look, you could be right.
I don't say
what I'm saying with any certainty.
I'm not convinced by my argument. I'm
surprised that I'm being the positive one and you're being the doom predictor, the doom monger. I'm just so blown away by our respective stances. I feel like the universe is turned upside down.
I don't know what to do with myself. One element of it, though, is it is different watching up close and seeing somebody up close to watching them on just on TV, which is what I've been doing.
Yeah, so I know better than you, and let's move on.
Well, that's highly possible.
That is possible. The fact that you're saying this and that you're the most positive person in the world is making me sort of check myself and wonder if I may be being too positive about it. But I'm going to stand by my guns. I know what I saw today. I'm not certain about my prediction by any means, but I feel confident in my reason to believe that she has a bright future.
Well, I don't...
And that this won't... Crucially, that this won't be a flash in the pan.
Yeah. Well, I like it, Catherine. I like it a lot. And no, I mean, she's been a joy to watch these past 2 weeks, no matter what. One interesting note as a final point on this, also from Chris Evert's commentary today, where she said she's got to learn now to say no as much as she can, because there's going to be so many things offered to her. You mentioned some of them, the endorsements, the media opportunities, etc. She's got to ensure that being a tennis player, getting the best out of herself and living her own life still the way she has been able to can continue. Because, you know, she'd won $1.3 million her whole career up until today. She won $2.1 million for winning this title. So her life is already turned upside down in many regards. I think that is important. She's got to figure out a way to be herself, and that will give her the best chance.
Without question, and it's something that, as much as I have a lot of time for Angelique Kerber, and I think she's basically not a sort of mercenary sellout type person at all, I really don't. I do think that, for example, just comparing her Twitter presence today, or these days, to what it was before she won a Grand Slam title or became the world number one, now it's just corporate promotional tweets. It really is the tweets that you don't believe for a second come from Angelique Kerber. It's promoting some sort of weird product, or hey, just received my latest at whatever. There's some kind of diet food company that she promotes that I find really bizarre. Hey, just received my latest diet chef package, loving it, hashtag loving it or something. And I just sort of die inside a bit for her, because I don't really believe that that's her. I believe that I just think that sort of everything's just been on a bit of a treadmill for her and got a bit carried away, and she's had to sort of signed up to things that she perhaps didn't realize the consequences of, or I don't know. I'm filling in a lot of blanks here, but I know that her sort of social media public presence is very different to what it was before she became a star of tennis. And like every one of those tweets, every one of those deals, it isn't just doing a tweet every now and then. All of them come with appearances lots of appearances basically, and lots of time out of your schedule and all the rest of it, and they take their toll.
Yeah, there is a bit of a template for what happens if you win a Grand Slam, and various boxes you're able to tick immediately, and it's all just laid out in front of you in order to make vast sums of money and get lots of publicity and all the rest of it.
And I'm quite sure it's very easy to end up sort of sleepwalking through it all. And look, there are good sports agents out there and there are bad sports agents out there. I have no idea what kind of sports agent Ostapenko has, but you know, the influences you have around you at this stage become very, very important, and you're surrounded by a lot of people that have their own agendas. And she's 20 years old, and that, goodness knows how easily led astray I would have been at 20 years old. I've no idea, but it's a lot, and you're absolutely right, all those things could come into play and she could end up burning out and who knows. But I see a fire in her that gives me confidence in the next 10 years of her career.
Yeah, well, I think that's great, and I hope that that bears itself out. Just a quick note as well on her coaching setup. Being coached throughout her life by her mother, and now by Annabel Medina, the former or current player, I think, actually, but she's been injured and has been guided by her for the last 6 months or so. Great story, great sort of achievement from them individually, but also Chris Clary pointed out today that it's an important moment for female coaches, and maybe the acceptance that why on earth not, and let's actually start seeing if this can lead to more female coaching appointments.
Well, absolutely. I retweeted him on the comment that he made, and it just seems so sad that that's a point that even has to be made, but unfortunately it is. I find it so bizarre that it's a point that even has to be made. And it's just a template that exists, isn't it? You know, male coaches, you know what, and you know, you look at what Andy Murray went through in terms of the barrage of questioning and having to defend his position for appointing a female coach. I wouldn't necessarily want to put myself through that. It would make me second guess myself, and still I hear the analysis that, you know, Murray wouldn't misbehave and behave badly on court and do his old histrionics in front of Lendl. You know, that was the narrative this time last year. You know, he's ditched Maresmo because she wasn't enough of an authoritative, substantial force in the box for him. You know, she couldn't keep him in check on the court. Well, frankly, nor can Lendl. It's all about Andy Murray, how he behaves on the court. It's nothing to do, really, let's be honest, with who he's got in the box, because he's done it plenty of times under Lendl. He's done it plenty of times this tournament under Lendl. It really bothers me that narrative still persists, really, of that relationship. That's, I mean, nobody, you know, really gives Amélie Maresmo any credit at all, whereas I think she still deserves a lot of credit for how Andy Murray plays on clay. But everyone seems to look back on that as sort of this relationship that dissolved because she wasn't an authoritative enough figure. And I can't believe this is even something we're having to talk about, but sadly it is. And obviously female coaches are every bit as qualified as men's.
Well,
end of story. Let's move on.
Unquestionably. It's just nice to have something that puts it front and centre and
absolutely,
and helps to move that along a little, I think. Anyway.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. The men's final is coming up tomorrow. We have an interview that Catherine has done with John McEnroe. Who better to talk to than John McEnroe? I'll be hearing for him in just a moment. It's exciting, this, to think that we've got Wawrinka Nadal. But it is also interesting that so many of us picked this as the final. When we saw the draw, it did stand out, didn't it? Even I...
When you say so many of us, did you
even
think this
I got this
final?
One right, Catherine.
Did you? Oh, I did too. Yeah. Okay, right. I couldn't quite remember what your predictions were. Yes, I did too. I feel very smug that I got three of the four finalists.
Virtually
obviously,
all of us picked this as a final.
Did we? Yeah, I wish I could say I picked Yelena Ostapenko to be the champion, but alas, my foresight is not that great. But yeah, and I tell you what, this is worst case scenario for Rafael Nadal. This is the one person he did not want to play, and even more so did not want to play in a final. And I think people are being far too generous to Nadal, or far too ungenerous to Wawrinka in their predictions on this. I really do. Yeah, Nadal's been playing brilliantly, but every player that's ever faced Stan Wawrinka in a Grand Slam final has been playing brilliantly in the lead-up and has been the favourite. Going into it, Stan Wawrinka wins Grand Slam finals. That's what we know about him. And I think it's more marginal than any other Grand Slam final Wawrinka has gone into. I think it's a 51-49, but I give the 51 to Wawrinka. I really do. Stan Wawrinka plays his best in Grand Slam finals, and I know Nadal is playing brilliantly. I know that, and I think either way, it's probably going to be five sets tomorrow in a fantastic final. But I really think people aren't paying enough attention to Wawrinka's incredible record at the latter stages of slams. I think he's a beast.
He is, yeah.
And I give him the edge.
Holly, you're picking Stan Wawrinka to beat Rafa Nadal in the final tomorrow.
Yeah, marginally. I know it's what I said, not what I said pre-tournament. And I know that's sort of ridiculous because Nadal has only been even more impressive throughout the tournament than he has been so far. And as I say, I'm talking 50.1 to 49.9. But yes, I know there's no logic in this at all, but sort of swayed by what I saw today, you know, these sort of expectant champion in waiting versus the upstart go-getter all or nothing type player that nobody's predicting. And yeah, there are a lot of parallels, I think, between today and tomorrow. And I know there's absolutely no logic in saying what happened today is going to happen tomorrow, but I give the minute edge to Wawrinka.
Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport there. Incidentally, I have to say that the Ostapenko performance today did influence me a bit as well in that regard. Having said which, I did then run a pole vault on it. 500 votes have come in so far. Only 1% think that Stan Wawrinka will win in three sets.
I can't even... Oh, hang on, win in three sets. No, I don't think I'm winning... Well, hang on, 1% is pathetic, but... yeah, there's no chance. I mean, Stan Wawrinka doesn't do winning. Okay, he has in this tournament, but generally speaking, he doesn't do winning in three sets, does
20%
he?
20% in
he
total.
Only, he needs four sets to reach his best. Like, it's almost like he can't play his best over three sets. Like, if he's going to win, it needs to be in more than three sets. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I'll take that. Anyway, yeah, so basically there are 80% who think Nadal will win.
Really?
Yeah, 80% think that Nadal will win, 20%
he's won every Grand Slam final he's played.
Nadal's won nine out of nine in the French Open.
Look, are you saying you think 80%? Again, I don't want to fall into the trap.
You're going
here
to now disprove your own theory.
No, but you don't know. Percentage of people voting for something does not measure the strength of opinion in those that voted. I think that's a very clear. That's one of my main issues in pole vault, that you conclude from those stats that people think that Nadal has an 80% chance of winning.
I haven't.
That's not the case.
That.
Every single one of those people could have voted on a 49-51 basis. That's not the right way to interpret that data. So
that isn't
I don't
what
know.
I've done.
Look,
though,
come on, he's won every Grand Slam final he's played. Come on,
Nadal's won 14.
Come
of
on,
them. 14 slams.
Yeah, okay. Look, we can all throw stats at one another till we're blue in the face. I've said my piece. You say yours.
All right, I'll do it in a minute. Anyway, Catherine's been speaking to John McEnroe about Rafael Nadal against Stan Wawrinka, and McEnroe had agreed that sounds pretty good.
It sounds great. I mean, I just worry a little bit. Stan played 4.5 hours. Raf has cruised through to the final. He seems he's going to have a lot more left, but Stan puts the fear of God in anyone. He's one of the few, if only, players that I know, top players, that the guys at the end of the tournament are more worried about than the guys in the beginning. And if he can get through that first week, he gets on a roll. And what I've seen the last 3 or 4 years has been pretty historic for him. If he's got one more left in him, somehow bounce back after that match with Murray, that would be unbelievably impressive.
People have been describing Rafa's form as unbeatable, but the fact is that Stan is 3 for 3 in Grand Slam finals. He doesn't lose them, does he?
That we have to make sure that people realize how great a player he has become. I think that stat's pretty telling. He seems to be a guy who's just incredibly fit. This will be the ultimate test. I mean, I don't think there's ever been anything more difficult than beating Rafa, best of five in the biggest court in tennis at the French Open. So he's going to have his work cut out for him, but he's one of the few guys that can hit through anyone, even including Rafa. So if he gets hot, anything can happen.
Magnus Norman, Stan's coach, talks about his natural fitness, his natural endurance. Do you think he will be able to recover from that 4.5 hour semi-final against Andy?
Well, as someone who has a great amount of respect for him and loves the sport and wants to see a great final, I certainly hope so. The guy that's going to test him more than anyone ever would in a match like this would be Nadal. So we'll see. I mean, he's 32. He's the oldest finalist here in 40-something years. So that shows you how difficult it is, what he's already pulled off. To beat Nadal, who's obviously the greatest ever clay court player, if he were to do that, my hat's off to him.
And in terms of the matchup, what are you expecting tactically from each of the two players?
Well, tactically, I anticipate that Nadal's going to make him run a lot, sort of test the legs. Stan's going to have to win a lot of early points, you know, hurt him on his serve. That's going to be important, his first serve percentage, and how big he goes off the serve. You know, I anticipate, even though Rafa's mixed it up more, gone for more on his serve, that he's going to maybe back off, get a higher percentage, and not allow Stan to rip a second serve return. Instead, he likes blocking more serves. So I anticipate he'll try that, but we'll see.
Nadal is going for something truly extraordinary, La Decima. It would be extraordinary for tennis. Can you put it into context in the whole of sport where it would sit in the list of all-time great sporting achievements?
At the top, you know, close to the top. I mean, I know guys like Phelps have had like something like 30 gold medals, and you look at some of the accomplishments of some of the all-time greats in their own sports, and you say to yourself, has anyone topped this? I don't think so. I mean, Roger winning Australia was an unbelievable achievement. So, you know, the two of them in our sport are like the Mount Rushmore, what we have in America, and it's been a pleasure to watch him over the years. I can't believe he's still playing this well, and I can't believe Stan's gotten better with age like a fine wine.
Hopefully we all can say the same. John, who's going to do it tomorrow?
I got to go with Nadal. I think that he's fresher. He's still hungry. Stan has the best puncher's chance of anyone. He played a long match with Murray. I don't care who you are. It's tough to come all the way back from that. So it's hard to see that happening, but I'd sure like to see it go a long way.
So, Catherine, John McEnroe in your company on Eurosport. And, this is exciting, isn't it? The prospect of this final. Roger Federer, you mentioned how Wawrinka basically doesn't get going till it gets into four sets. Roger Federer's nickname for Wawrinka is the Diesel, which I think is perfect, isn't it? That's something Chris Clary wrote in the New York Times. Great piece. And, I mean, there are other factors as well. Magnus Norman was in the coach box of Robin Söderling when he was the man who beat Nadal in 2009. Maybe he's going to be able to concoct the tactics that are required. If anybody can, he can.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this guy knows how to craft a plan to win a Grand Slam. I know it's Nadal. I know he's been playing brilliantly. And as I've said, it's marginal. But how many more times can I say it? Stan Wawrinka and Magnus Norman win Grand Slams together when they get into finals.
Well, they do. They're not winning this one, though. This one's going to go five sets, Catherine, in my view. I think Nadal will have enough. I think he will be so relentless. I think there will be periods when even that relentlessness is thwarted by the explosiveness of Wawrinka. But I just think Nadal is an unstoppable force this week. I just don't think he will be denied. And he's had the perfect warm-up against Dominic Thiem as well. He is 26-0. I was reading in a Mark Pecci piece written in The Telegraph. 26-0 at the French Open against opponents with single-handed backhands. I know this is a single-handed backhand.
None of those have been Stan Wawrinka.
No, I understand that, but he's won six out of their seven matches on clay as well. 15-3 head-to-head.
I don't know. You can produce all sorts of stats. I'm not sure that...
No, they're all irrelevant.
I don't think
ultimately
the comparisons with Dominic Thiem... Dominic Thiem had his head down, as we discussed yesterday, had his head down, or was it a couple of days ago, whenever it was, had his head down after three or four games. Stan Wawrinka will not put his head down at any... He'll lose the first set and he'll feel even more buoyed. He'll feel like, yeah, I've got him just where he wants him. And I get the thing about Nadal bouncing up the topspun ball to the Wawrinka backhand, but I think Wawrinka is better, significantly better at dealing with that than any other single-handed backhand player on clay. And I'm you sort of backing me into this big corner of really confidently predicting that Wawrinka's going to win. I don't feel confident about it at all. As I say, I think it's incredibly marginal. I'm not going to be surprised at all if Nadal wins, and it will be the most amazing story and just all glorious. Both stories are glorious. But if I'm backed against the wall, which I always am on the tennis podcast, I will just go for Wawrinka.
Okay. Oh, it's exciting, isn't it? I hope you're all looking forward to it. We've already had today the wonderful story of Yelena Ostapenko. We've also had the doubles final result, which has resulted in Ryan Harrison of the United States and I don't even know this guy's first name. What's his name? Michael Venus of New Zealand.
Michael Venus of New Zealand, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a colleague, haven't we? Dave Worsley, who's a Kiwi radio reporter who was very excited about this news. Anyway, Ryan Harrison and Michael Venus have won the doubles title on the men's side. They've beaten Gonzalez and Donald Young in the final there. So, fantastic achievement for them. And the women's final is tomorrow. It is going to be Bethany Mattek-Sands and Lucy Safarova against Ashley Barty and Casey Dellacqua in a match at 11:30. That'll be good local time. And then the men's singles final is local time 3 p.m. So 2 p.m. in the UK. What's that sort of
build up? Starts at 1:30 p.m. on Eurosport.
Oh, Catherine, brilliant. So exciting. And
I think in the plans at the moment, I will be live courtside with Pat Cash at the start of the show and with Mats Wilander just before the players walk on court.
Oh, fantastic. And how's your...
And it'll be Mats Wilander and Simon Reid in commentary. So how can you resist?
That's too good. Too good for words. So 1:30 UK time tomorrow, Eurosport. It'll also be on 5 Live as well if you're listening in the radio in the car and want to listen on the radio. And Catherine, had a good day generally today? Has it been all right? Any interesting things happen?
Yes. Well, you know all the interesting things that have happened, really. I've just brushed the sort of 8 layers of hairspray out of my hair. And that was, I mean, the things that sort of telly hairspray does to one's hair is not, not probably not podcastable, really.
I don't have to do that.
So, no, I wish I didn't have to do that. The sound that the hairbrush made passing through my hair was not a normal sound for such a process. Oh, hang on. I know what you're getting at, David. Something else happened today.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
I was... Now, fangirl alert here. Fangirl alert. I was standing courtside waiting to get into the photographer's pit to do a live cross with Mary Pierce immediately after the presentation ceremony of the women's final. And we were sort of standing in this little inlet courtside while the... sort of strong young men brought the various pieces of the podium onto the court, and there were about 15 pieces of them. It didn't seem to be a particularly efficient process, the construction of the on-court podium for the presentation ceremony. And I'm just standing there sort of stressing about various elements of the whole situation, and suddenly this hand appears under my eye line. And I look at the hand and I look up and it is the hand of Mary Carrillo. And I just assumed that she'd mistaken me for somebody else. To be clear, Mary Carrillo is my living hero. And I think yours as well, David.
Yep.
She's not that familiar to UK audiences, which is a terrible shame.
Just give a brief synopsis of who she is and what she's done, Catherine, for anybody outside of the United States who's perhaps not come across her.
Well, she was a great, great tennis player in her own right. Played probably most famous for playing mixed doubles with John McEnroe. Won a great deal of titles, but was a great player. But has subsequently become maybe not a better analyst, but even more renowned for being.
I would say she is.
Well,
far
yes,
better.
But I'm just reluctant to do down her career. That's not what I want to do at all. She is even more renowned now as a broadcaster and analyst of the sport. She works predominantly for the Tennis Channel in the States, but for other broadcasters as well, I think. And she is just fantastic. If I could ever be a fraction of the broadcaster that she is, I would die a happy person. She really is. I know we are at the risk of sounding really, really sycophantic, but trust me, she is worthy of it. She is a glorious broadcaster. So this hand appears below my eye line and I look up and see that it's Mary Carrillo, and obviously just assume that she's mistaken me for someone else. And
because you've never met her before.
But I sort of, I'd never met her before. No, I'd never have the guts to go up to Mary Carrillo and just start. Not because she's any kind of sort of diva or anything, but just because she's super cool. And why on earth would she want to talk to me? But look up, see it's Mary Carrillo. And I was about to sort of say, I don't know what I was about to say, but before I could say anything, she said, "Hi, I'm Mary. I love your podcast. I listen every week." And obviously I failed to get sort of any kind of cohesive or interesting words out at all. She told me she particularly loved the episodes in the pub. I said I was just so flattered that she even listened, let alone liked it. It was all just grotesque fangirling, really. I'm sure I dealt with it dreadfully, but she is fantastic. And if every one of you listening now tunes out and never listens to this podcast again, I think we'll still keep making it, David, just
in case she carries
just
on.
If Mary Carrillo is listening, honestly, I really think I would keep going if even only Mary Carrillo was listening. And I hope that one day soon we can get her as a guest on the podcast and all the people listening, and we could maybe bring her to the attention of the British audience, because that's what she deserves, and that's what the British tennis watching public deserve.
Ah, well said. I think she's wonderful. And when you told me that this had happened, first of all, I swore and told you you were lying.
You did. Yeah, it was the best reaction I've ever had from David Law. And David Law is an enthusiastic man about everything. So to say that this reaction was notable above all other reactions is really saying something. Yeah. Look, I'll end my fangirling now because I can hear people tuning out in their droves.
Oh, nobody's listening.
It's just Mary
and Lars Graf. That's it.
It really, really was a special moment. Yeah. It really was.
It was fantastic. Right, Catherine, bedtime. There's a final tomorrow. Got to get some sleep. It's too exciting. I don't know how I'm going to get sleep. This is like Christmas Eve. And anyway, it's time to go now. Catherine Whittaker is going to be on Eurosport tomorrow. Coverage begins at 1:30. You got the Eurosport player if you're out and about and want to watch it that way. You could listen on 5 Live. There's loads of ways to be able to stay across it. Read all the articles in the Telegraph. There's the Mark Petchy piece on tactics. Very interesting that. There's also the Simon Briggs stuff that you'll be able to read. It all happens tomorrow. Now, listen, if you've enjoyed the tennis podcast, I think we've done about 14 of them, mostly because of Catherine's hard graft. Go and leave us a review on iTunes. That way everybody gets to hear about the show. We can grow the audience and keep it going as long as we possibly can. Follow us on Instagram. There's pictures. There's all sorts of stuff. Catherine behind the scenes doing what she does in Paris. The French Open men's singles final is tomorrow. We'll be back with the tennis podcast straight after. Speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.